on January 18th of 2017 was the first time that I surrendered and I checked myself into
pause back up and say those two words again.
I surrendered. Yeah, I put myself into treatment. It wasn't for anybody else. It wasn't because the family was saying I needed to go. It was because I had enough. And I have been clean.
That's a sermon. Okay.
I have been clean since that day. Okay. So in January of this year, by the grace of God, I will be celebrating 9 years of clean and free.
Yes. Whew. This is heavy and powerful and beautiful and just intense.
It is. It's a lot.
Hey, everybody. It's Octavia, the gym coach, and we're back for another episode of Heart Sleep Podcast. I'm super excited. Today is amazing because there's so many great things about this episode. So number one is this is the season finale, which is crazy. We have done 8 episodes for season 1, and I am so honored that I've been able to hold space for 8 plus individuals, 8 plus hours of recording. Like, this is just crazy. The last episode was Jaleesa Dallas, and she talked about her book Soul Work and really just outlined for us how in order to get inner healing, you have to be willing to do the work. Yes, God will show up when you pray. Yes, God is always there, but you still got to show up and do something. So if you didn't catch that episode, go back and watch it. And also watch all of the episodes, because I'm telling you, there's something in there for everybody. I know you'll be blessed. That was the first thing. Number two, today's episode is going to be so good, because the guest that I have today is super special, as all of my guests have been. But this guest, we go back like 20 plus years. It's crazy. We go way back. You know what I'm saying? So I'm going to introduce to you my guest, and then I'm going to tell you a little bit more about her after I introduce her. But please help me welcome Miss Vanessa Jackson. Woo! How you doing, girl?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing great. Are you excited? How you feeling?
Nervous. Excited.
It's going to be good. It's going to be real good. Listen, so me and Vanessa, like I said, we go back 20 plus years. We were in high school together, Edgewood Warriors, you know what I'm saying? And we actually did not like each other when we first met. We was tripping. So we have grown up since then, and we are like beyond frenemies, and we are cool. Are we cool?
Oh, yeah.
We're good now. So we grew up and all of that. But Vanessa has a phenomenal story, and I'm really just honored that you were willing to share this in this space, because as you know, HeartSleeve is a space that wants to that seeks to talk about the hard things that the church really doesn't always talk about, right? And sometimes when things are hard, the church struggles to journey alongside folks. So we're here to get rid of that. This is a space that hopefully you will find safe enough to be brave enough to share whatever you want to share. I'm ready. You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. So, Vanessa, you have gone through a lot, but I want to talk about where you are today. So I'm a probably jack up the title for your job. But anyway, I'm going to try it. I'm going to try it out. So number one, you're a mom, right? You are a mother of 3, yes. 1 boy, 2 girls, and you got a little baby. How old is she?
She's 3.
3, Miss Dream. Yeah. She is so pretty. So you got that going on. But during the day, you work for a organization that does substance use treatment. Yes. And you are the deputy executive director.
Correct.
Ooh, I got it. Okay. Because I thought I was going to butcher that. So tell us a little bit about what you do and what that organization does.
So it's like Area Recovery Center. Mm-hmm. We do substance use disorder and mental health.
Okay, treatment. Y'all do mental health too? Okay.
Yeah, we started that in 2023.
Nice.
We have been around 57 plus years serving the community, treating those with substance use disorder. We have the residential treatment program where they can stay anywhere from 30 to 90 days to get the treatment. And then we have outpatient groups. We have recovery housing. We have MAT programs. Yes. And then we incorporated the mental health.
Now, what's MAT? Because people don't know what no MAT is.
Medication assisted treatment.
Yes.
Excuse me.
Yes.
And that's just to, you know, help those struggling with the substance use.
Yeah. And how long have you been there?
I've been there for December will be 5 years.
Dang.
dang, I didn't even know you were there that long. It seems like you just started. That's awesome.
Yeah, so I got the position that I'm currently in, I got that promotion in July of 2023.
Nice. Yeah. So 2 years there.
In that position, yeah. But for the company, five. Yeah.
So basically, Vanessa's a boss, and she's out here doing big things. Now, you know, we went to school together, and everything in high school was perfect, and then you graduated high school, and you got this job. Is that how everything went down?
No.
There was a story along the way, yes, right? Yes. This story is about to be so powerful, you guys. Today, Vanessa is, you know, a boss at her job, a boss in the community, a woman of God. She's just out here doing big things for the kingdom. But it took some time. It took a journey to get there. And Vanessa has agreed to share that journey with us today. So I'm excited. Let's talk about high school, adolescent years, because Vanessa and I met prior to this and had a meeting. And I remember saying to you, like, you was hiding in plain sight, hiding in plain sight, because Vanessa and I used to see each other like every day, like at the house, at school. Like, Vanessa was fam for real. We used to see each other all the time. And some of the things that Vanessa shared with me about her journey, I never knew. Like, as much as we kicked it, rode around together, did all the things, I never knew she was going through some of the things that she shared with me. So whatever you want to share about your adolescent years in high school and some of the things that you shared with me about, you know, mental health and those types of things.
Okay. So, you know, at a young age, I grew up in a house that had abuse and addictions. My father was an addict. Mm. So I, you know, witnessed that. Didn't understand, you know, what I was seeing.
Yeah.
But, you know, he would come home. Now I know he would, you know, come home drunk, mm-hmm. and high and not very nice. You know, he mm-hmm. had, you know, put his hands on my mom a few times that I can remember. And things were just not always enjoyable.
Wow.
We went out without quite often because he would steal things or take things from the house, take my, you know, the money to get mm-hmm. high with. So I remember plenty of times my mom, you know, I'd overhear her on the phone crying, like, I don't know what to wow. feed them. You know, he took everything. You wow. know, what am I supposed to do? So stuff like that. And then, you know, at a young age, I was always picked on, too. I never fit in, I guess I could say. I used to go home on a daily basis begging my mom not to send me back to school.
Wow.
Because I didn't have friends and it just wasn't enjoyable. So I would say probably, like, fast forward, I want to say probably junior high is when it started. I started hanging out with certain people that were drinking and using drugs on the weekends. Mm-hmm. And so I started hanging out with that crowd and kind of found my place there.
Yeah.
So I guess I can start, you know, I can say I started using it or experimenting at a young age. Mm. Probably around 14 or 15, I think, is when it started.
Wow. And what were you experimenting with?
Alcohol and cocaine.
Okay.
Is what I was using.
So even in junior high, you could access cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
Because it was the people I was connected to and who, you know, they were a little bit older and wow. who they were connected to.
Gotcha. Okay.
So yeah, so that started. And then everything was just kind of like a downhill spiral from mm-hmm, there. Mm-hmm. You know, that's around the time that you and I met.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've always been in and out of church. So, like, even my mom used to take us to church
yeah.
when we were younger. And I remember, like, I hated going. I'm like, wow. Why do we have to do this every Sunday? Like, what kid wants to go
every Sunday, bro?
Sit in church, you know, every Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
And then something happened that we just quit going. We never,
okay.
you know, my mom just quit going. We quit going. And I was just like, okay, you know, I didn't question it.
Mm-hmm.
As an adult now, I know there was some things going on in that church my mother didn't agree with.
Gotcha.
So we quit going there and we just didn't find, you know, another church.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, junior high, I had met somebody. It was after my sixth grade year. It was mm-hmm. summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
I met this boy, and I was 12. And I remember, like, my mom was like, "You can't have a boyfriend at 12," you know.
Yeah.
And
that's a bit young. I agree with her.
And you know, we just clicked at this summer camp, me and this guy, and you know, we spent a lot, like, the next 4 or 5 years together.
Wow. Wow.
It was a lot, and a mm-hmm. lot happened,
mm-hmm.
you know, in that 4 or 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
I think that your first heartbreak, nobody ever really talks about, mm-hmm. you know, we just kind of, but that, I think, is one of the milestones, maybe, I guess I would say, in,
yeah.
like, my life, mm-hmm. of that pain, mm-hmm. I guess,
mm-hmm.
And then numbing that pain.
Wow.
And what that felt like, and that's where the big part of the drugs and alcohol, I think, came in.
So you just didn't want to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it's hard, too, if you think about, like, you know, 12 to, what, like, 17, trying to express your emotions while you're trying to figure out who you are and go through life and have friends and go to school and listen to your mom. And it's a lot. Yeah. And then there's just like a lot of peer pressure and other things going on around you as well. So why not?
Yep.
You know,
I said I never fit in anyway. So this is, you know, fitting in with people is all I ever wanted, you know? So it was that peer connection that I found just in a negative way.
Yeah.
But what do they say? You know, any attention's better than whether it's negative or positive than none at all.
Better than none. Yeah. And this is just so like surprising to hear. Like I said, when you first shared some of this with me, because like I said, we spent a good amount of time together, even when we didn't get along, like we still were around each other all the time. And I know that when I would see you and your family, like I just always thought you all had it going on. You know what I mean? When we met, I was a foster kid. Right. And so your family was very like essential and critical in my future and helping me, you know, through the foster care system. So I just never knew that you had these things going on. I was just like, wow, you know, grandma was like the head of children's services. I was like, okay, grandma, handle your business. And so like, just, you couldn't have ever told me that these things were happening for you. So we graduate high school and we become adults, which starting out, likely you will probably agree, adulthood was ghetto. Like, what were we even doing?
I think I'm just now starting to enjoy it.
Yes, yeah. Like, I've finally arrived, but it was real ghetto starting out. That was crazy. But anyway, so we became grown or whatever. Tell me about your journey through young adulthood.
So throughout high school, real quick, I'll just touch on that, you know, I used and any reason I could find to get suspended out of school, I would.
Yeah.
I didn't want to be there. Yeah. So I didn't actually, I never graduated from high school. So I signed myself out of high school on my 18th birthday. The day that I turned 18, I packed my belongings and moved out of my mother's house and signed myself out of school. I did obtain my GED.
Yeah.
So I, you know, I have that. But yeah, so I never got the experience of
walking
down that stage or with the cap and gown and experiencing, you know, that celebration with my peers. But I didn't care. It wasn't something that I wanted. I was working two jobs since I was 15.
Yeah.
You know, on.
Yeah.
I wanted
to work.
There
was one thing we would go do. We would go get a JOB.
I had my own stuff, my own money. That's, you know, I was grown at 15 in my head.
Yeah.
And once I became, you know, a legal adult at 18, I was going to show the world I have arrived.
Yes.
Kinda.
Yeah.
Throughout that journey, the whole time I was still using, I was put, my mom actually put me in a behavioral health hospital.
Okay.
I think I was 16 or 17 at the time, I think. Just to kind of show like that pain there, like I had a few attempts of suicide.
Yeah.
And I don't, looking back, I would say it was more of a, like a cry for help.
Yeah.
Like an attention thing, not that I so much wanted to die or attempted to really, you know.
Right.
I had the self-harming stuff like that.
You wanted somebody to listen and pay attention. Yeah.
So I did, you know, did that. And then, you know, I turned 18 and I was just off and running. I worked, I had my own place, but I was getting high every single day and just functioning.
Wow.
It was, you know, whatever.
Wow.
It was life.
And I really appreciate you highlighting on that, because things were hard for us then. And like, I really believe that what our youth go through today is probably even crazier.
Yeah.
Like, our cell phones did not work like theirs. Like, we had to wait till after 7. I had a flip phone.
Yep.
And it was crazy because, like, the letters was little. Like, it was crazy, right? And so, like, we didn't get to just, like, I mean, MySpace was a big thing, like, when we were adults. Yep. You know what I mean? So, like, we ain't know nothing about social media. And so they get to scroll and scroll and scroll. And I think you highlighted something very important. Like, even when things look like they're good, even when we think we've arrived and we're doing the things, there could still be this pain going on inside with our youth and with anybody that they don't really talk about. And so they could do things to cry out for help. And a lot of times we as adults get so irritated because we got life going on and we're like, what the heck are you doing? You know, put it down, chill out. You know what I mean? And we just, we sometimes can be a little bit dismissive.
Yes.
And so you talked about, you know, just the suicide attempts and the self-harming as a cry for help. And, you know, I'm just number A, just want to say grateful that you're sitting here today. So thank you for being here. Okay. And just want to encourage, you know, anyone watching as parents or loved ones or whatever, even friends, to just really show up for people when they're, you know, sharing about those types of things. I think right now is actually like the month or maybe yesterday was a day for 988, you know, for suicide awareness and prevention. And 988 is a big organization nationwide that supports individuals who might be considering suicide. So you can call or text 988 and get support immediately. It's completely anonymous, and you can, you know, just talk with those folks and share what's happening with you. So I just wanted to throw that in there. Okay. So that happened. You turned 18. You signed yourself out. You had arrived. Where'd you go from there? Did you get your own place, or like what happened from there?
Yeah, I just moved in with my boyfriend. Not the first love.
The breakup was there.
That had all happened.
Okay.
And I had met somebody else, and so we had a place together.
Okay.
Him and I started talking around that 16-17 year old mark for me. It got so bad with the drug use and everything that I was doing and running alongside of that man that I actually was court ordered to stay away from him at one point. So like the behavioral health hospital happened. I was put on house arrest. I was arrested because I ran away from home to go be with him before I was of age. So sorry to backtrack, but just kind of
so that happened in those younger days
that mattered, you know, to our story.
So
we had our own place. He was you know, doing what he did to make money, and I was working. So the supply was just there. It was just always there. So that went on for a while. He ended up actually getting busted and was looking at some jail time. So we decided that, you know, we loved each other and we didn't know how long he was going to go. So we were going to have a baby. So at 18, I got pregnant, and then I had my daughter when I was 19. My oldest daughter. Delivered her.
Pause. What?
Wait a minute.
You was like, I don't know how long you gonna be gone, so let's have a baby real quick.
That's what he wanted, so that's what I was willing to give.
And it'd be making sense in the moment, right? But looking back, it's like,
why would I do that?
What you was doing? What you was really doing? Yeah. Okay. Continue. My bad.
So he actually ended up only getting like 6 months. So he wasn't gone. He wasn't gone long.
You were still pregnant when he came out?
No, I actually had her while he was in prison. Gotcha. So he wasn't there for the birth of her.
Okay.
But he came home when she was 6 months
old. And that's a huge thing too.
So there was, you know, some ill feelings, I think, with that maybe in the moment. Yeah, I was sad that he wasn't there. But looking back, it's like there's those special pieces that are missing when you want somebody that you love to be a part of.
Right.
And being young, you know, a first-time mom living in the hood, more or less. I lived in housing because I couldn't afford a place. I was grateful for that, though. I had a roof over my head.
Use the resources if you need to.
So, you know, learning how to be a first-time mom by myself was hard. I had an emergency C-section. I almost lost her. Mm-hmm. So that was scary. So there's a lot of traumatic, you know, things that took place with all of that.
Mm-hmm.
In the time of that, like, I had quit using.
Okay.
When I found out I was pregnant, I was using up until I found out I was pregnant, and then I quit using. Put it down, never went, you know, had no problem not touching it.
Yeah.
I became an STNA. I worked at the same company for, I don't know, 6-7 years.
That's awesome.
Just, you know, he came home. We were raising our family. We had a good life. We ended up getting married. She was born in 2007. We got married in 2010.
Wow.
So we were together for 12 years, married for 7, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get to why we're, you know, not any longer married.
Mm-hmm.
So life was good. I was just working and taking care of the home life. And then, you know, we got married and life was good. Life was good.
And it sounds like there was a turning point.
There was.
Okay. There was. Let's go on ahead and head in there.
So I'll start with, in 2009, I had to have a major back surgery.
Yeah.
So my whole life, I used to complain about my back hurting. My mom thought that I was just being a hypochondriac. Mm-hmm. You know, no hard feelings to her. There was some things. My mom had some medical issues going on, and I was extremely close with her.
Mm-hmm.
I still am.
Nice. That's
awesome. But so it's like I seen my mom in pain, so it was like I wanted to be in pain too, is how, you know, she took that. But looking back, there was actually something wrong.
That was a real problem.
I have had degenerative disc disease.
Wow.
So my discs have, in my back, you have discs in between each of your vertebrae and your spine.
Right.
And my whole lower spine, which is my lumbar, the L3, 4, and 5, there was no disc. It was just bone on bone.
Mm.
So I was always just, you know, kind of moving around. God, my back hurts. You know, it hurt to stand for a long time. It hurt to sit. It hurts to lay down. It's just nothing was comfortable.
Right.
So I seen like four different specialists. They all told me the same thing. I was 21 years old. They said, if you don't have the surgery, you're going to be in a wheelchair by the time you're 30. You're not going to be able to walk.
Mm. So and how old are we now?
I'm 37.
Okay, because we're not in a wheelchair. That was the point. That was the purpose of it. Carry on.
So I had went ahead with the surgery. It was very long, intense surgery. Traumatic experience as well at 21 to go through. I have metal plates and screws holding my whole lower spine together.
Okay.
I had to learn how to walk again. I walked with a walker for 3 months. I had a body brace that held me from under my armpits to my hips. I couldn't lift my baby. She was two. At the time, I couldn't pick her up. I wasn't even allowed to pick up a gallon of milk. It was too heavy. Mm. So it was just a lot of, you know, a lot of healing and a lot of stuff went into that.
Yeah.
He was still just my fiance at the time, but he was great through all of it. He was there. He was supportive.
He
did things that I couldn't for myself.
Yeah.
And we got through it.
That's
About a year after my surgery, and around the time I think that we were getting married, I was still just in constant pain. Mm-hmm. So I was suggested by my surgeon to go to pain management. Mm-hmm. And so I went to pain management and I was put on oxycodone, which is Percocet.
Mm-hmm.
I brought in my x-rays and my MRIs, all these discs, everything to show him. He didn't even care to see any of it.
Mm.
He turned me around, pulled my shirt up, seen that I had this huge scar up my back and was like, not a problem. Here's some pills.
Wow.
Take four of these a day. You'll be fine.
Wow.
So I was naive to the narcotic world. Let me tell you.
A lot of us were. There was a whole epidemic about that.
Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's where my journey, I guess, as you know, obviously I was dibbling and dabbling with cocaine in my younger years, but I say this is where the turn took for me becoming an addict.
Yeah.
I couldn't take the pills. They made me sick.
Mm.
So I was suggested to crush them and snort them. Mm. And I could not wrap my head around this. Why would anybody crush up a pill and snort it? Like, it was the dumbest thing I ever heard.
Mm-hmm.
So one day somebody put it to me like, well, you snort cocaine, don't you? It's no different.
Mm.
I said, okay, let me try this. If it helps with the pain, I just didn't want to be in pain. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
So I did. And next thing I know, I'm, you know, full blown addict. I'm running out of pills early.
Wow.
I'm missing pill counts, you know, because with those, you got to see your doctor every so often.
Yeah.
It just became this whole deal.
It's a whole issue. Yeah.
So when I lost that prescription, I knew some people who were, you know, in the streets, and they said that heroin is the same thing, and it was cheaper.
Yep.
So I said, well, I don't know what I'm feeling, because without those pills, I was experiencing very uncomfortable things, not to mention I was in pain. So I thought, and I just wanted that to stop. I didn't know what was happening.
Right.
So that's where my heroin journey began.
Wow. So that's a lot to go through, you know, experiencing all of that trauma, trying to figure yourself out. And you said you were newly married too, right? Mm-hmm. Or in the process somewhere in there. So tell me a little bit about that journey, that part of your life, because that's kind of when things really got real.
So we got married, and you know, things, I think for the first year of our marriage, things were, you know, perfect.
The honeymoon phase.
That is, it applied big time. You know, after that first year is when things really took a turn, with my usage, got, you know, really heavy. You know, you become somebody else. You're not the same person that you were. You do things that you know normally wouldn't do.
Yeah.
Because you have this, I want to say, you know, demon more or less inside of you, because the drugs are evil, and they make us do things. And, you know, so there was a lot of lying on my part. There was stealing not only from myself but from my family.
Wow.
So you know, I spoke on like how my father did that.
That's what I just thought. Yeah.
When I was young, and I'm just like, you know, looking back now and like, here I am doing that same thing.
Wow.
Gratefully, I can say that my children, they never went without per se. Like the bills were never shut off. They still had food on the table.
Mm-hmm.
But I robbed them of much more than that.
Of you?
Of my, you know, and even myself, including my husband. You know, I took from him. I took a lot from him. And I don't just mean like material or financial, you know.
Yeah.
The emotion, the pain that I caused, the trauma that I caused. So things were, you know, and he stood by me. He was ready to go to war, you know, for me.
Wow.
I know when he would find out anybody that I was purchasing from, he'd straight go right to them and tell them, you sell to my wife again, I'm going to, you know, I will
handle this. It's going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yes. You know, so he really showed up. But there was issues, you know, there was, even though he was being that, and I thanked him for that, there was a lot of underlying issues. There was a lot of, emotional and verbal abuse, mm-hmm. you know, that was always going on in the house. Even prior to me using, mm-hmm. And then me using obviously just got worse. Mm-hmm. So that, you know, that went on, for the next, I don't know, four years.
Yeah.
I have like a lot of like blind spots mm-hmm. in my gaps timeline. Yeah. So it's mm-hmm. a lot of times that my time might not be correct, mm-hmm. but it's how I can kind of remember it.
Yeah.
Cause things are blurry. But in 2012, my son, he's actually my stepson. Mm-hmm. He lost his mother to wow. a heroin overdose. Mm-hmm. So that was a big eye opener. I wasn't actually using heroin at that time. I was still just on the pain pills.
Gotcha.
And I remember thinking to myself, like, how could she? Mm-hmm. You know, how could she do this to these children?
Yeah.
Because I knew she was battling something. She was in and out of treatments and jail and et cetera. And I remember, I guess I judged her.
Yeah.
I can look back today and sometimes. Say, you know, I was judging her. And I just remember when I received that phone call, I had just got to work that morning. And I received the phone call from her mother telling me. Mm. And so, you know, I had to leave work and I had to go home mm-hmm. and, you know, break that news to my husband and to our son. Mm. That was difficult. Mm-hmm. That was hard. He was 10.
Wow.
You know, he's grown today. He's 22, you know, 23 years old.
He's phenomenal. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. So I remember judging her for that. Like, how could you? And then before I know it, that was in July of 2012. And I want to say, by December, I think I was using the same thing that killed
wow.
her of that same year. So, yeah. So everything, you know, in and out of treatments for me. Now mm-hmm. it's my turn. Mm-hmm. And you know how they say everybody gets a turn. You know, I said, I wonder if this is my karma for judging her, because now it's happening to me.
Right.
So, you know, I was in and out of treatment, kept going to detox because, you know, everybody was like, you can't, you know, get help. You got to get help. Mm-hmm. I didn't want the help mm-hmm. because not that I enjoyed what I was doing, but I did. Yeah. I can't say any other way. It wasn't that it was fun, but it was what worked for me.
Yeah.
I liked the way that it made me feel because I had to feel nothing. I was numb.
You talked about that from the beginning of being numb to emotions and physically you wanted to be numb. So it was working for you all the way around.
Yeah, it did. And it was literally destroying my life at the same time. Right. Yeah. I went to, in 2014, I want to say it was, I was looking at 2 years in prison or I got offered to go to treatment.
Okay.
So I chose treatment. It was a 90-day program. Mm-hmm. And it was actually for the company that I work for today. That's where I went.
That's awesome.
I was on, I went in there with an ankle monitor on. on house arrest and went into treatment with, you know, on house arrest.
Yeah.
So I did 90 days in their program. And when it was time to come out of their program, you know, I'm just going to say 90 days isn't enough. You know, the fog just started to lift. I just started to feel again. And I instantly we want to run from those emotions.
Yeah.
I've numbed them for so many.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, and that's the point of treatment, you know, mm-hmm. and it does work. Mm-hmm. It is rewiring our brains and the way that we think and process things. Mm-hmm. So I did their program and then, you know, I have a husband and children mm-hmm. at home. It's time to go home. Mm-hmm. And I was terrified. I didn't want to go home. I noticed that I didn't feel for my husband the way that a wife probably should at this point. Mm-hmm. I know that I loved him and I felt like I loved him because I felt that I owed that to him. Mm-hmm. But I was never really clean and sober ever in our relationship.
Yeah.
So the minute that I actually was like really clean and around him and functioning, I was just like, I don't really like this. Mm-hmm. So I ended up going to a 3/4 way house. Mm-hmm. I didn't go home after treatment. Mm. I went there and I got a job and I started working and I was seeing my kids and I was trying to be involved and I did well for a while.
Yeah.
And then, you know, another relapse happened and back to treatment I went.
Yeah.
And, so that was like a cycle, a vicious cycle that
went
on.
And it happens, and people
quite some time.
Need to understand that because sometimes there's just a lot of people that don't understand recovery and substance use. And so sometimes relapse happens.
And as I said, if you're still breathing, please come back.
Yeah.
Because the fact that you're still breathing and that you can't come back, it's okay if you didn't get it on the first or the 50th try. If you're still alive, please keep fighting.
Yes.
That's what's important.
That's
and
good.
That's why I said our doors will always be open to keep welcoming them, you know, whatever
that's
it takes.
That's so good.
Mm-hmm. So in 2016, I believe it was February of 2016, there was a situation that occurred that is what ended my marriage. Mm. So throughout my journey of all of this, you know, I have, like you said, experienced a lot of emotional, physical sexual abuse.
Yeah.
I was raped when I was 16. And I never shared that with anybody. I hid it. I tried to bury it. And I just kept, you know, numbing with drugs. And then it happened again in 2016.
Wow.
You know, a lot of people think that that's not possible.
Yeah.
Because how does, you know, how can your husband do something like that? You know, is it considered that, I guess I should say?
Yeah, a lot of people do think
that. But it is considered that, and that is exactly, you know, what happened. And that ended our marriage. We went our separate ways, and I began to try to rebuild. I had, I was clean. I was in a period of a clean time at this point in my life. And I want to say about 6 months after this is I had a relapse and I started using again. And that was probably to deal with, you know, what was happening.
Because you had that happen. And then the first time, you know, and the other times come back up, I would imagine.
And the initial, my thought is always, this is my fault. If I would have just, or if I hadn't been, or if I didn't do, you know, so that was a lot to, because even when I was 16, I'm like, if I wasn't doing what I was doing at that time, maybe that wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
And then I look
we
at
do
it
a lot
again,
of self-blaming and shaming
same
ourselves.
Thing. If I would have just been, maybe this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I, once again, here I am not telling anybody.
Yeah.
Hiding it, trying to bury it, and just go on about life like nothing happened. So I moved out. I stayed gone for a while, and then he ended up moving out, and I went back to my house where I lived, and I had the kids for a while, and I was just, you know, working and living life. I ended up going to treatment again. I was out there using for quite some time, met somebody in the process that was supportive of me, which actually ended up turning into, you know, a relationship as well. And looking back, I'm just like, I was very vulnerable. That probably shouldn't have been.
Yeah.
But it's what happened, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So on January 18th of 2017, was the first time that I surrendered and I checked myself into
pause. Back up and say those two words again.
I surrendered.
Mm.
Yeah, I put myself into treatment. It wasn't for anybody else. It wasn't because the family was saying I needed to go. It was because I had enough. And I have been clean.
That's a sermon. Okay.
I have been clean since that day. Okay. So in January of this year, by the grace of God, I will be celebrating 9 years of clean and free.
Yes. Whew. This is heavy and powerful and beautiful and just intense.
It is. It's a lot.
you highlight so much right here. When things happen to us that we do not ask for, that we do not give permission for, it is not our fault. It is not our fault. And I know that I've shared on at least one or more episodes that I am a survivor of sexual assault and other forms of abuse. And I need you to know that it's not your fault. It's not, and it takes a lot of work and inner healing to get to that place, but it doesn't matter what the relationship was. We don't owe to anyone to give of ourselves what we don't desire to happen to us. I'll just leave that there. There's, you know, a lot of scripture and there's a lot of things that people might say with that, but I'll put it like this. That the Bible says that we are to submit to our husbands, yes. But it also says the husbands are to love us as Christ loved the church.
Right.
And love is deep. And love is intense. And if we all do our parts in a relationship, these things will start to make sense to people.
Yes.
That no one has the right to do something like that to anyone, married or not.
Yes.
So, we got about like 10 more minutes. And I just want to make sure we hit on some things. You, in 2017, I think you said you surrendered,
yes,
which is amazing. So I also want to say yay you on that. And things started to turn, but you also still experienced some hard things in the turn, right? And you know, I'm going to let you tell your story. But through all of that, remained sober. So I know there was some grief that happened, and maybe a few other things. So do you want to pivot there?
Sure. Yeah. So my first year in recovery, my father committed suicide.
Mm. It's okay.
Apologize.
No apologies. This is exactly what this space is for. And I was sharing with Vanessa before we even started recording that, you know, as I've shared on many other episodes, that Heartsleeve is about this. Heartsleeve is about having conversations that are difficult, that are challenging. And sometimes the saints, the church, and even folks outside of the church, like sometimes we get so uncomfortable and we want to run from these conversations and we want to quiet folks because if it makes me uncomfortable, like, let's keep it moving, right? But we can't do that. Right. Like, we have to show up for folks. And I really am grateful to God that he gave this to me. Whether y'all want to believe it or not, Jesus, the Lord, he gave this to me and said, you hold a space where you hold moments for those folks and you allow them to share and you journey alongside them. So that's why we're here. So whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. So, you know, that happened and I knew I was actually on vacation in Florida. So I wasn't even in my hometown. And I had 2 more days before I could get a flight to get back.
Wow.
So we dealt with that. I have a brother and a sister. Mm-hmm. You know, so when I remained clean through that, I knew that obsession to want to use or to numb was no longer there.
Mm-hmm.
And that I knew how to, or was learning how to process mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. feel emotion and know that, you know, mm-hmm. it was okay to feel those things.
Yeah.
And then I felt like I had to be the strong one for them, you know, so I had my time away from them to grieve in Florida for that couple of days, which the grieving never stops, you know, but to come home and kind of be the strength for them.
Yeah.
So, you know, that happened. And then, in 2020, I experienced a miscarriage.
Mm-hmm.
I was about 15 and a half weeks.
Wow.
So that was another, you know, and through all this, it's like, I even still just kept going.
Mm-hmm.
I sought professional help here and there, mm-hmm. You know, to speak with somebody about, mm-hmm. you know, the things that I was experiencing.
Yeah.
But even through that, you know, I was told at one point in my life that I wasn't able to have any more children, because of some medical things that had happened previously mm-hmm. in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And after my daughter. So I just thought, you know, well, I just had the one and mm-hmm. that was it, you know. So then to become pregnant again, like, it was scary.
Yeah.
And then I kind of started to wrap my head around the idea of, you know, having a son, because I knew, I never got confirmation, but mm-hmm. I just knew that mm-hmm. that's, you know, what it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
And then to lose the baby that far along and for them to say, you know, like, it doesn't usually happen this far, you know, but it did. But I said, you know what, that's God.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, I wasn't meant to have that child, you know, and that's okay. I had to accept it.
Wow.
So life, you know, life was happening. I was growing. COVID happened and I was able to slow down in life, I mm-hmm. guess, because, mm-hmm. you know, we couldn't leave our houses.
Yeah, it closed down the nation, the world, really. So
during that time, I did some schooling to obtain my CDCA, which is my chemical dependency counselor's assistant certification.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I applied to LARC, was in December of 2020.
Nice.
Started off as a monitor in the women's residential facility.
What is LARC?
So Lake Area Recovery Center.
Yes. Okay.
So I started off as a monitor in the women's building, and I grew from there. I went to a PMIOP counselor mm-hmm. for that agency.
What's that stand for?
Intensive outpatient program.
Okay.
So it's 3 days a week, 3 hours a group. Mm-hmm. And then from there, I went into being the clinical insurance specialist.
Wow.
Where I dealt with the prior authorizations mm-hmm. with the insurance companies for the clients needing treatment.
Mm-hmm.
In this time of this transitioning, there was a lot of stuff happening in my personal life mm-hmm. with my daughter mm-hmm. And her father. They didn't have the greatest relationship. Mm-hmm. There was some absenteeism going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I was working, you know, till 9 o'clock at night because I was running the PM groups.
Mm-hmm.
So that change into that other position was like a gift, right?
Yeah, it's a godsend, yeah.
And that's what I say, that, you know, I needed, because I needed to be home more with her. Mm-hmm. So working during the day did that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Also in this time frame, in 2021, I bought my first house by myself, solely on my own. Mm-hmm. And I moved in that house with my stepson and my daughter.
Nice.
It was perfect for us. Mm-hmm. That was in September of 21.
Nice.
In January of 22, I found out that I was pregnant.
You can't have kids.
I can't have kids.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I was no longer with my partner that mm-hmm. would be this my daughter's father. Mm-hmm. So I went to the doctor and I was pregnant, but I was 4 months pregnant.
Mm.
I was told I was having a girl at my very first appointment. Mm. I had no idea I was pregnant.
Wow.
I just bought a house that was not big enough for a baby.
Wow.
So, you know, we made room. We built mm-hmm. a room in the basement. We made room. It was, you know, and she was born in July of 22.
Oh, my gosh.
And that's who Dream is that we talked about in the beginning.
Dream, she's so cute.
She is my gift from God. She mm-hmm. is my rainbow baby. Mm-hmm. And I say that God knew that I needed her even when I didn't.
Mm.
Because that was a lot of acceptance
mm-hmm.
That went into having that baby. My daughter was 15, you know, and my son was, you know, 18, 19, grown.
Yeah.
So to be bringing another child into life and once, you know, I'm not with this man.
Yeah.
So that was a lot to accept and it was a lot to, I guess, navigate.
Yeah.
And adjust. But everything just kept unfolding. Mm-hmm. You know, God was just showing up every time I turned around. He just kept seeing me through.
Yeah.
Giving me the strength that I didn't have, that I didn't think that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, with that clinical insurance job that mm-hmm. I had for this company, for Lake Area Recovery Center, that gave me the opportunity to work from home because it was all, you know, on the computer. So the first year of her life, I was able to just be home with my baby, raising her, and still had my job.
That's so awesome.
You know, that was a beautiful thing that happened. In June of 2023, mm-hmm. Is when I got the promotion. You know, I was given an opportunity to apply for the deputy executive director's position.
Deputy executive director.
And I, you know, secured that bag.
Yes. You better get your bag, sis. Okay.
Through all this time, you know, I just say it was God. Mm-hmm. To rewind real quick, my son got baptized in January of 23.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
At the city church.
At the city church. Yeah.
And mm-hmm. I wasn't going to church. I believe in God. He's always been a big part of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to lie. I've questioned him and doubted him at times. Like, my father mm-hmm. took his life, I, you know, it was kind of like, why?
Mm-hmm.
But my son invited me to church. You know, I really want you to be there. Please come for this. So I was going no other reason but just that day, mm-hmm. you know, to watch him get baptized. Mm-hmm. And what I experienced when I walked through them doors was welcome home. And that's what they say.
Wow.
You know, every time you walk in there, that's what's said to you mm-hmm. is welcome home.
Mm-hmm.
So in January of 23, when I watched him get baptized, I've been attending that church ever since.
That's amazing.
I go every Sunday. Mm-hmm. And if I can't go, I'm watching online.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
My life has evolved mm-hmm. so much since that, and just really building that relationship with God again mm-hmm. and accepting him back into my life. My daughter, Zaya, she is now 18, but her and I got baptized together in February mm-hmm. of last year at
that
church.
That's amazing.
And just the blessings that mm-hmm. I have, I'm blessed. I don't know what else to say.
That is, this story came full circle, okay? God is all in your story. You know, though these types of testimonies, everyone has testimonies, right? But these types of stories are things I feel that, you know, it could have only been God.
Yeah.
Like, it could have only been God. And he shows up even when we aren't recognizing that he's there.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes we can get religious mindsets and be like, well, the word and I, you know, and we can kind of try to challenge, or how you mentioned, you know, we can judge, we can do all of these things. But God definitely uses the foolish things to confound the wise. Right.
Yeah.
And I remember with my first daughter, you know, having my first daughter at 19 years old. And I used to always, I still say, you know, she saved my life. Yeah. Like, God allowed this for her to save my life. And I hear so much of that in your story. This was a lot.
Yeah.
It was intense, and you shared boldly and beautifully. And I just want to thank you for that. From the very beginning of just not having identity and knowing who you are, all the way through, like, I don't want to be here, you know, I mean, I don't really want to die, but maybe it's better to, you know, maybe it's my fault these things happened to me, you know, with sexual abuse and, you know, just the journey throughout recovery and substance use and recovery. There was a lot in there, but in the midst of it all, God's fingerprint was in there.
The whole time.
You're still here. You now know, I hope and believe, that you are worthy, that you are loved, okay, that you are valued, and you are chosen. Yep. And Vanessa, you're meant to shake the kingdom. You're meant to do big things. And so I'm not about to cry either, because you ain't about to have me on here being emotional. But I am so honored and so grateful to have had you on this podcast. Before we wrap up, is there anything you want to say? Any final words?
Just anybody who's going through anything, just don't give up. Keep fighting. Build that relationship with God, because he'll, Amen. You know, give you that strength and see you through. You're never alone.
Mm-hmm.
And there's help. There's resources yes. out there for anything that anybody's struggling with. Mm-hmm. That just for people to know they're not alone.
Yeah.
You know, this month is Suicide Awareness, mm-hmm. Prevention Awareness, and National Recovery Month yes. as well.
Wow. Okay.
So, you know, September is a huge month. And I think that also makes me, you know, be a little emotional mm-hmm. just because mm-hmm. my passion and what I do for a living.
Right.
I'm here to show people that there is life after addiction.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, just keep going.
Yeah. There's resources out there for you. You're never alone. And one of my favorite scriptures is Hebrews 13:5. That was a scripture that came to me in a time where I needed God most. And the scripture says that God never leaves you and he never forsakes you. So you are never alone spiritually and in the physical, the practical. You also have people and resources there that are willing and ready to say, hey, welcome home, and just walk alongside you. So please know that. And I know that one of the main things you had told me when we met in our meeting was that you really want to call out women,
yes.
Especially to let them know that, like, hey, there's life in recovery, yes. you know, after use, there's life in general, you know, through whatever you've encountered. So y'all get with my girl, Vanessa, you know, you can hit me up too, but you know, she just wants y'all to know that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you for
That's
having me.
That's literally all I can say right now. You are super welcome. As we wrap up, I did get you something because I had wanted to bless you. I'm going to try to get it because usually I have an assistant with me. They be handing me stuff. But I wanted to bless you. And say thank you for being on this episode. It then fell a couple times and got squished, but there
Makes
you go.
Makes it even more special. thank you so much
for being here. I just want to honor you. And this is going to move some things and some people. God really definitely used you today. So
I pray he did.
He did, girl. He did. And so that's the season finale, y'all. I know y'all crying. I know it was a lot going on, but listen, thank you so much for being here for this episode and for sticking with Heart Sleeve through all of the episodes. This is the final episode of season 1. We'll be back in a couple months with season 2. Bye.